أشهد أن لا أشهد أن محمد رسول الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله حي على الصلاة حي على الصلاة حي على الفلاح حي على الفلاح الله أكبر الله أكبر لا إله إلا الله
إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له له الملك وله الحمد يحيي ويميت وهو على كل شيء قدير وأشهد أن سيدنا محمدا عبده ورسوله إمام المرسلين وخاتم النبيين صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته ولا تموتن إلا وأنتم يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله وقولوا قولا سديدا يصلح لكم أعمالكم ويغفر لكم ذنوبكم ومن يطع الله ورسوله فقد فاز فوزا عظيما I was asked today to speak about what is going on in Palestine. It was not really the intention of this khutbah today. Originally, I wanted to carry on with elements of Suratul Mudassir, which I had to cut short last time I was here. And it was quite pertinent and right that it is the proper position of the khutbah to reflect the issue of most concern for all Muslims. But the reason why I was shying away from even attempting to talk about that issue is that along with many other Muslims, I find it excruciatingly painful to just watch. And that's all. Just watch. You see the news, you hear the comments, and then what? It's not my intention in this khutbah merely to recite a list of casualties and make big speeches and shout in order to get your emotions up. I can barely control my own emotions. My intention rather is to try a little bit to get us to reflect. In doing so, I will try to put issues a bit in the context. Most, if not all of us, have seen what is going on. For some of us, it's so painful that we can't bear to watch. On the other hand, we can't bear not to watch because it's there in our mind all the time. And what it is that we have seen, what have we actually seen? Does it correspond to the reality of what is going on?
I remember, and still up till now, if any issues come up about, say, Zimbabwe, still happens. The BBC, amongst all the other media outlets, they say, we are not allowed to enter Zimbabwe to report, therefore we are reporting from South Africa second hand. We're just giving you a taste of what is going on because we ourselves are not there to see what is going on. But shamefully, in this particular instance, they report as though they were eyewitness to what is going on. You may not be aware, there are no international journalists of any description anywhere in Gaza. Everything that you see on the BBC, ITN, or anywhere else, these are second-hand accounts of what is going on. And where are their journalists? They're sitting down in Jerusalem, absorbing everything being told to them by the Israeli government, and simply reproducing for us to see. But even this sanitized news is so difficult. Now, that is what these journalists absorb while sitting down in Jerusalem. Imagine if they were there telling you as it is. No journalist of any description anywhere else is allowed. This is against international law. These media organizations have no shame. They don't have the decency to tell their listeners, we are not witnesses. What we are telling you is secondhand. The reality may be and is much, much, much worse than we are reporting to you. So, what is it that you see? It's not probably a fraction of the reality. Then I consider, you see this on television, you absorb this, you hear this comment and that comment. And then you see this picture being painted that there's a war going on. I keep scratching my head. Which war? A war involves two armies fighting one another. To be a testimony to the fact of what is going on is not a war. I was reading the Haaretz newspaper, which is an Israeli one of the most Zionist of all newspapers in Israel. I need to tell you from this angle so you can see that what you are seeing is a mere fraction of the fact of what is going on. And he was saying, what our pilots are doing is easier than target practice. What our pilots are doing is easier than target practice. They have no opposition. They're not dodging any anti-aircraft missiles. They know all they're doing is looking on a video screen at a dot and pressing their trigger and coming back. The reason why it's easier than practice is, in practice, they check what target you've hit and they can give you an assessment of whether you are right or not. In this case, so long as the bomb lands in Gaza, it doesn't matter. We don't care. Easier than practice. That's war. If you go in the school and you see a sixth form student beating up a child who is in preparatory primary school, you're going to say you're breaking up a fight? Are you going to say you're breaking up a fight? You have an army displaying F-16 bombers, which were meant for aerial combat with another air force, and pretending that it is fighting a war. And you hear the statement, we are fighting a war to the death. Who's death? Imagine somebody killing people on the ground, and he says, I'm fighting a war to the death. Who's death? Today, we were counting over 400 Palestinian dead. And still people are making false equations about what is actually going on. And the despair is not just what might be going on. The despair also is about the reaction to what is going on. Look at the reaction of the so-called international community. And what does this mean, international community? Who is the international community? I heard the Secretary of State for America saying, we are sorry about the more than 300. At that time, it was just over 329 dead. That's all we knew of, in fact. Well, we are sorry about more than 300 Palestinian dead, but it is the responsibility of Hamas. I thought, what are you saying? This is the reaction of the so-called international community. Then you look at the reaction of Muslim government. I say Muslim government, I mean government in whose country majority of people are Muslims. Your heartache just gets worse. Then you look at the reaction of the Muslims themselves and say, well, the Prophet was right, Ya Rasulullah. You get the leaders that you deserve. This thing that is going on, I don't want us to see it as, it's a total no-hope situation. And I'll come to that in just a little bit. And I wanted to look at, in reflecting to it, what our part might be in helping the situation. But before I go on to that, I wanted to just quickly address a couple of things about the exact situation of what is going on. The people who are living in Gaza, have they always lived in Gaza? 1.5 million people in a place smaller than the Isle of Man. Do you know how many people live in the Isle of Man? Just a few thousand people? In the world of the United Nations, this is by far, not by any proximity, the most densely populated piece of real estate on earth. Why? Because the people who live in Gaza had not always lived in Gaza. They live in the places now freely occupied by the Israelis. They drive them into this cage. So when they complain to all the world, we are only doing it for our own security, you need to remind yourself, where did these people come from in the first place? On the second day of the bombing, they hit a mosque. Targets. You're talking about targets. They hit a mosque. And in hitting the mosque, they killed five sisters. They're all sisters. The youngest one was four. Did you know where the father and mother of the sisters came from? They came from a small town in Israel proper when they were driven out into a refugee camp, which now becomes so permanent, even the world has no shame. A refugee camp, they turn it into Gaza City. This is not a city. It's so densely populated, you could not do anything in terms of selecting the target. Even if you say, okay, fine, you have legitimate security concerns, quote unquote, which targets are you hitting? There was one of these gentlemen from an organization called Forward Thinking. You know, I'm quoting these people to you because they're not Muslims. And I don't want to appear to be merely getting your emotions up. He wrote in the Independent newspaper, and he said, last week, that is the week before the bombing, I was there in Gaza police station. And I was congratulating some policemen who, under our auspices as a kind of aid organization, we were teaching them how to do conflict resolution. Okay? Today, which is the day he was writing the article, all those policemen were dead. They were getting their certificate in the ceremony when they were bombed. Why? They're just civil servants. That's what policemen are. They're not even graduated yet. They're in the process of graduating. And he said, I was having a conversation with them last week, and they asked me, we wanted to know how foreigners feel in Gaza in the last few months. Do you feel secure, more secure? And he said, my response was, in the last 18 months I've been coming to Gaza, it's much, much more secure than it was before the last 18 months. There were no more random kidnapping, random gunmen in the street firing, and so on and so forth, looting and so on. There are no more of that. And you graduating is to reinforce the sense of security amongst the people. And I know there is a blame game going on, even amongst Muslims. Some of us say, well, Hamas is to blame. They should know this is what would happen if they resist Israel. Maybe. Or the Arab governments are to blame because they let the Palestinians down. Maybe. The international community is to blame because they let the situation fester. Maybe. Ironically, I've not even had many Muslims blame Israel for it. It's strange. Who is launching the bombs? But all those blame may be valid. But you have to remember, where did Hamas come from? You need to reflect on the facts in order to help you dig yourself out of a situation of despair. Where did they come from? They won an election 3 years back. Based on what? Based on the fact that the Palestinian people simply come to a conclusion, simple. Those who are governing over us are too corrupt to be interested in our affairs. They had a political party which says, we shall try and remove corruption and do our best to rebuild civil amenities for the people. Simple. Because of their record in charity work, the people trusted them and they elected them. In fact, to their own surprise, everybody was surprised. Before them, the governing party had itself admitted that they had just been corrupt. They had not grasped the nettle of the people. For all the complaint of the Israelis, they recognized Israel, but they didn't get anything in return for it. There are people still living in refugee camps, and corruption was rife. Then we said to Hamas, well, unless you recognize Israel right from the start, nothing else is going to happen. And they say quite clearly, no. That happened before, and nothing has changed of the Palestinian people. We ourselves are not interested in conflict. Let us have a long-term truce, a 10-year truce. You will not launch attack upon us, we will not launch attack on you for 10 years. Have you ever had that before? Did you remember the Treaty of Hudaybiyah? Did you see what it did to the Prophet and his Sahaba? Let's have a 10-year truce. It gives us time to reflect and build up amenities for our own people, and it gives you time to reflect. They said no, and shamefully our government and the American government, they said about destabilizing the place. They admitted it. It's not a case that anybody is making accusation against them. It culminated 18 months ago, and you need to know this for facts, that it becomes internal fighting amongst Palestinians. Really a most despairing situation. One party had to leave Gaza, another party is ruling West Bank, another party is ruling Gaza. Strange. Same people. But in that 18 months, they have done everything possible to destabilize Gaza. It has failed. And 6 months ago, they said, okay, because we failed, and we did have to pull out of Gaza more than 3 years ago. Why? Because it was just too hot for us as Israelis. We leave them to their own devices. We just fence them up. Big prison camp. And they agreed the truce as negotiated by the Egyptian government. Everybody talks now, including the BBC, ITV, and everybody. Nobody told us the terms of those truces. It's a 6 month ceasefire. And the agreement is very clear. Twofold. We stop attack against Israel altogether. And the Israelis don't attack us, and they let the border free so that people can trade. Food can come in, food can go out. and they kept Tonya Bargain. Testified by an Israeli newspaper, Haaretz, you can read it for yourself. They kept their bargain, no missile, for 4 good months. But the border was never opened. They kept systematically starving the people. Every few months, the United Nations have to scream, you are not allowing us enough aid. And we're talking aid, we're not talking even trade to go in. People are starving. And then 4 months into the truce, everybody again forgot this. 2 months ago, they went in and killed loads of people in Gaza. Everybody forgot that. And as a consequence of that, the rockets start firing onto Israel. Meaning because rockets, they don't do next to no damage. But they say, no, it doesn't matter. It's not a numbers game. We can kill 400 people for one. It's probably appropriate some of the blame against Hamas. Maybe, maybe not. But you also need to redress the facts of the situation. What are they supposed to do? Our people entrusted us to look after their affairs, and instead of doing that, we were merely simply to sign the same agreement that was signed before, that brings no peace, that brings no respite to our people, that brings nothing to them. All we ask for a breathing space. Give us 10 years ceasefire. We're not even asking yet for 10 years our lands back. All we're asking is a space to look after our people for 10 years. When we know where we stand, and we can stand with our own 2 feet, we can't face up to the issues. No, but they won't allow them any respite. This is the reality of this situation. And I know I'm running out of time for the khutbah, but I want you to imagine something. It is you. You are sitting in an apartment in Gaza, and I say apartment, how you call it an apartment, I don't even know. With your wife and children, today, Aliyah, all the windows are gone because the whole place has been bombed to bleeds. Your house is still standing, but there is no window. And it is winter. There is no electricity. Because there is no electricity, the pumps don't work, so there is no water. No sanitation if there is no water. There is no food. You can't go out to buy the food. Even if you have the money. So never mind if you are rich. And if you are rich and you can afford generator because there's no electricity, well, there's no fuel. And you can't even buy it. And those who risk their life to help you to bring some aid, they too, their warehouses are empty. And even if it's not empty, they can't move about under the bombs to help you. And that's not the worst of your fears. You're scared, should you or any of your children go ill, nobody to look after them. You can't buy the medicine. It's not there to buy, even if you have the money. And you can't take them to a hospital. The hospital cannot even look after the dying, never mind the sick. This is your situation. Then every day, the bomb, the bomb, the bomb. And the whole world is looking. That's all. The whole world is just watching. I was telling my friend that I'm ashamed to be a Muslim. It's actually wrong. I'm ashamed to be a human being. It's strange. How is this possible? Every time they tell us, oh, you live in the year 2000 plus, you know, you don't live in the ancient ages. How is this possible in 2000 plus? How? What type of civility is this? And they talk about terror, terror, terror. Imagine your terror if you were sitting in that flat. This is the ultimate of terror. According to the Haaretz newspaper, they are targeting. But what is the target? Mosques, money exchanges, police stations, schools, universities, student dormitories. How did they distinguish at 1,000 feet between an ammunition dump or a hospital? How do they distinguish? They can't, and they didn't, and they don't care about doing so. And the casualty is a testimony to that. And then this is civil, or that they fear the terror, they're giving the terror. In really is a strange state of affairs. But in concluding this, it has been much worse before. And this is the context I wanted to put in our mind that you need merely to reflect. It might give you an idea that it's the state of the Muslims that is partly or mostly responsible for the situation we find ourselves in. I remember in 638 when Omar entered Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is an embodiment of that whole region. They conquered Jerusalem without a bloodshed. They took the keys. I remember Umar was even invited into a church. And he was coming to Zuhur prayer, precisely Zuhur, around this time. And they asked him to pray in the church. He said no. He went outside, moved further away from the church, and he prayed in Zuhur. That's where the Masjid al-Umar, I'm not talking about Al-Aqsa or the Dome of the Rock. This is a different mosque where he prayed. What did he... Infighting, the decadence, the decline of the Muslims bring the matter so down that in 1199 the crusade started and they were able to take Jerusalem. When they took Jerusalem, they wiped out absolutely everything Islamic. Absolutely everything Islamic. The Jews can be making their own claim now in their own words. This is their words. They celebrated the conquest of Jerusalem in the crusade by putting all the Jews into their synagogue and burning them alive. And don't forget, the Jews were not allowed for hundreds of years into Jerusalem until Umar took Jerusalem. Then he allowed them to build their synagogue. So it's been worse before. But the crusade ended. And the mosques, you can see there, Al-Aqsa and the rest of them were built after this. Or rebuilt, shall I say, after this. How? A lot of people say, well, Salahuddin Ayyubi came and he fought bravely. And that is the end of the story, not the beginning of the story. The Muslims started seeing the decadence and the division and the weaknesses, and they started changing community by community across the whole area. This is what led to the culmination of Ayyubi. Ironically, at that time, there were relatively new Muslims, mainly Turkmens and Kurdish from where Salahuddin Ayyubi came, that started this reform movement to reform the community. Only when a reform community gathered together can they face the Crusaders. And precisely what happened. And they brought back prosperity into Jerusalem. It's not all total despair, but we need to be concerned about the situation. أقول قول هذا استغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر Just a quick reminder. I know it's time for the prayer. You can look at what is going on and put a context to it in your mind. وهذا you show concern because you are in the community of believers. As Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, if you do not concern yourself with the affairs of Muslims, you are not one of them. Do your little best to help. I understand there will be a collection for Palestine after the prayer. Do your best, whatever you can afford, give. Show your concern. There is a demonstration tomorrow from Oxford Street. About 12 o'clock they start regarding this. Just to show concern for what is going on. Do your bit. However, we will never change until we reflect on our situation. And if we reflect on our situation, an individual changing, a family changing, a small community like an Eccles changing, a lot can change in the world. Please do your utmost best, the little that you can. Don't be despairing. Just reflect on the issue. It's painful, but that's our situation as we stand. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma rabbana atina fi dunya hasana. Wa fil akhirati hasana wa qina adhaban nar. Rabbana la tuzigh qulubana ba'da idh hadaytana wa hab lana min ladunka rahmah. Innaka antal wahhab. Wa aqimus salah.
الله أكبر